TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. The Future of Electric Cars. Jim McGreen and friends build a prototype for an electric vehicle that is not a car, that is not yet in mass production, that is assembled from parts used by early VW, electronics from Silicon Valley, lithium batteries from China, and a motor invented by Nikola Tesla in the 1890s. A vehicle design that raises an important question about the future of electric transport. Is the automobile, as we know it, really the only model for personal electric vehicles? Are there lighter, simpler solutions that use less power but might remain impossible if traffic is dominated by cars that weigh 3,000 pounds and more and shoot along at murderous speeds? Shortly before going to Sebastopol, California, to record Jim McGreen in his development workshop, I was part of a two-day event in an old hotel, two-thirds up the slope of Mount Tamalpais. That's a stark, dark mountain rising 2,500 feet above the Pacific Ocean and the Farallon Islands, San Francisco, and the East Bay. I sat under one of the wind-whipped cypress trees and watched the sunset over San Francisco. From this bird's-eye view, the city, once famous for its clean air, lay under a dome of pollution that, I was told, no longer disperses. And San Francisco is a city without big industry. Statistics confirm that the largest source of air pollution, reaching into the 90th percentiles, are the so-called mobile sources, airplanes and hundreds of thousands of cars and trucks that move around all day and also relentlessly at night in their streams of taillight red or front beam white. The view I had for those days is one that is rarely shared. This 100-year-old hotel often stands part empty because it cannot be reached by car, only with a 2-mile walk or on a bicycle uphill. On the day I recorded him, Jim McGreen had come to work on his electric bike, one of his very early bikes that has a small electric motor transferring the shaft rotation to the top of the front tire with a roller drive. In 1991, McGreen had begun building and selling parts and assembled electric bikes out of his shop in Alameda. His company was ZAP, Zero Air Pollution. McGreen says the only other electric bicycle he was aware of then was one built by Bob Schneeweis. In 1996, ZAP made a successful public offering on the stock market. Unfortunately, that now allowed investors control over the company. The complete story is told in a March 2008 issue of Wired magazine. They write that in 1997, McGreen invented the Zappy, a two-wheeled stand-up motor scooter with a top speed of 15 miles per hour that very quickly became a national sensation. And sales in 1998 went up to 1.4 million per month. The investors wanted to move production to China to make more money. McGreen resisted and, in a board takeover, was kicked out of the company he had founded. ZAP survives to this day, plagued by mismanagement and consumer legal action. After the traumatic loss of his company, McGreen started over. I was part of a group that visited him in May 2013 to find out about the latest invention, the Switch vehicle. In the development of McGreen's transportation, from electric bike to scooter, this is a purposefully small step further. A three-wheeler that is classified as electric motorcycle, even though it can carry up to 12 people or 6 hay bales, as it did when it won first place in the Sebastopol Blossom Festival parade. We pulled up chairs around Switch Prototype 5, an elegant light blue rollover cage made from 2-inch diameter steel tubing, with all mechanical works well exposed, from front shocks to electric motor to battery compartment to power transmission to the single rear wheel. In overall dimensions, the 10-foot-long Switch takes up the space of a small automobile and can't be crowded by other cars like a motorcycle. We had to wait for a while to hear about the Switch because McGreen spoke first about why he built it. He even included his trip to China and some of the electric bicycle history that he helped make, and that is yet another part of electric transportation that is really catching on elsewhere but has hardly begun in the U.S. of A.
My name is Jim McGreen. I live in Sebastopol, California, and I want to talk about two of my passions. One of them is climate protection and climate issues, and the other one is doing something about it. And one of the partial solutions is clean transportation. The climate issue is vast, but the solutions are going to be on every level possible. In 1990, 91, 92, a lot of books came out that were really very powerful as far as what they explained of what would happen as carbon dioxide increased in the atmosphere. And James Lovelock kept publishing books. That's the Gaia theory, Gaia principle. And Al Gore's Earth in the Balance was really well written and really established a lot of the things that are known to be happening now. And here we are in 2013, and decades have passed since those early 90s, and 20 years down the road. Now we're seeing what's happening, because climate's a very, very slow process. In fact, it's usually measured over 30-year periods, and we're only 20 years into this, really recognizing that there's a huge problem. And we're getting pushed way out of the range of where humanity's kind of grew up the last 30,000 years of what the experience of the local environments, and they're changing rapidly. So we can watch it change. One of the big change now is the loss of the northern ice cap. It's reduced in mass 80% from 1980. So there's only 20% of it, of that mass of ice left. And that's a huge rapid change. So it's what's called positive feedback, or a geometric change in climate. And so that's going to have huge effects on really everybody's lives. And Switch Vehicles is my latest electric vehicle kind of project. And I wanted to talk a little bit about electric bikes. What I started with was electric bikes by 91 or 92. They hadn't really existed, but there was one that was made by a friend of mine, Bob Schneeweis, and it seemed like it was the most practical way of getting non-polluting transportation out there. It hadn't really existed before that. There was a little bit in the 70s. So I started producing electric bicycles. It's a really practical and fun thing. So we made a little bit of business out of that. We thought it was a good idea that China could use these electric bikes, because everybody knew China had a lot of bikes. So I went over there in the middle 90s. I think it was probably 96. And flew to Shanghai, and we had a guy that kind of set this up. It went to it's the second biggest bicycle manufacturer in the world, called Forever Bicycle Company. And showed him electric bike and tried to get him interested in electric bikes. It was a kind of an odd situation. This factory was as big as a small city. It was blocks and blocks of multi-level production. And it was very old. It was really kind of built in the 60s, or in like the heavy red China kind of thing. And there's all these old Chinese guys sitting on a big table, and they were really grumpy. And they said that nobody was interested in electric bikes, that everybody wants scooters and cars, you know. But anyway, we made a deal with them. And we bought 100 bicycles, or container bicycles, them, and then we sent them 100 motors and motor kits for bicycles. And that was kind of the end of it. But then something happened, and they caught on to making electric bikes, because 2 years later, I read they made 46,000 electric bikes that year. They kept moving with electric bikes, and it wasn't long that I heard they were making millions of them. And then I heard they passed 100 million electric bikes in China. And then I did some more research, and in 2011, they produced 40 million electric bikes. And that's a pretty staggering number. It's more than the population of California. Everybody got one. In 1 year, they made 40 million. So I did the division, and it's 133,000 electric bikes a day is what they're made in 2011. There's a guy who wrote I think it was his PhD thesis, or master's out of UC Davis, and he analyzed the whole thing and the reason why it happened and how it happened. I think it was published about 5 years ago, so it was a little bit earlier before this peak. And the answer is regulatory, that certain cities decided to restrict the licenses on gasoline-powered scooters and would actually pull them off the road. If you didn't have the right license, pull them off the road. But there was no restrictions on electric, right? So electric bicycles, which for them was anything that had pedals. It's a kind of a broad definition, but like mopeds, like you see. So what they're riding now is mostly mopeds. And there are unrestricted licenses, and it kind of just forced people in it. They collected thousands of gas scooters, and I don't know what they did with them. They crushed them or sent them somewhere else. And you're walking until you went out and bought your electric bike. So actually the city I went to, Shanghai, was one of the first to ban or restrict licenses on gasoline-powered scooters. It was interesting, the way it sort of spread was, you could just call it an ecosystem of builders and battery makers. And in this analysis that this guy wrote from UC Davis, he said there was between 1,000 and 5,000 manufacturers at any one time making these bicycles. So that's how you get the 130,000 a day production. You know, it's mind-boggling how 130,000 of anything that big could be made in every day of the year. And well, I counted 300 working days. I think that changes like that are required to solve the climate crisis, because our carbon pollution is so crazy high. A really well-known climate scientist named Ken Caldera, who just came out with the obvious, but there needs to be a ban on all carbon-emitting devices. It's a huge change for society. That's everything. That's power plants and trucks and airplanes. But you know, there has to be that, or the climate's being pushed into an area that just hasn't been seen by humans. There's actually a meteor impact crater in western Siberia that's got the records going back 3.6 million years. So there was a place that gets glaciated but not scraped. So they're doing analysis of the bed, and they can tell how many times the climate shifted. So it's shifted rapidly and quickly. So it looks like climate sensitivity is medium to high. That means that the next shift is probably a planet that's like 90% less productive, and maybe could support, I don't know, optimistically, it seems like a billion's too high. So most people say a lot less. And we're at 7 billion now, and this could happen in decades. And we don't have to go that way, but that's where we're headed. Our carbon consumption now is in cubic miles per year. It's probably about between 2 and 3 cubic miles of carbon we burn. Dr. Paul McCready, who did the pedal-powered airplanes across the English Channel. So he's good at weighing stuff. He came up with one that humans, their livestock, and pets make up 98% of the world's vertebrate biomass of land and air creatures. You know, as far as being on top of the food chain, I mean, we are. There's only 2% that's not human-controlled creatures with spines, right? You weigh the bugs or something different, but we're it. We're all that's left, you know, we're on top of it. So that 98%, we control the temperature of the planet because there's so much of us. So part of the equation is the transportation is one small part. Well, it's not small, it's pretty big. Sonoma County, 60% of our greenhouse production, because we've done an analysis of that. We can reduce our carbon down to well, it's got to be nothing at some point, but electrical transportation makes a lot of sense, particularly here. We're the geothermal capital of the world. As they say, the geysers produces 200% of our baseline consumption. So we've got plenty of electricity. Solar is really inexpensive now, and I think that's a good chance to save us. Yeah. So we could talk about Switch. This is a new class of vehicle. It's considered a motorcycle according to regulatory agencies. It's kind of got a long history of like auto cycles and meter maids use three-wheelers and stuff. This one's a little bit more adaptive and utilitarian in certain ways. It's not a car. It's not even, I don't know if it's even quite close to a car. It's something new. Street legal, highway capable. We've really paid a lot of attention to what could be safe in traffic, particularly among large vehicles. A lot of newer ideas are going in, newer technologies, but the, you know, the basic layout isn't brand new. It's just more of a paying attention to, you know, what works. I've been thinking about different types of vehicles, and then I met my partner Peter. He did these Porsches and converting cars, you know, had a chassis, put batteries and motors in it. The idea was to build something that was a lot less expensive than a $60,000, you know, converted car. And the easy way is to reduce, you know, make it as minimal as possible. Minimal like a bicycle, you know, or a motorcycle. Really push into what could be left out. Keeping safety and the structure in place. What got me into electrics was a group we started called Clean Air Revival. And what we did was sponsored races. You could have three or four wheels, you couldn't have two. And it was imported from Australia, this competition. So it was battery powered, you had one battery and you race for an hour. So we developed different kinds of chassis and got to really learn about how they handle by racing different ones. This is kind of what everybody settled on as being stable and predictable and kind of normal, you know. It has to fit in there with regular traffic. We're in a step called pre-production right now. We're finalizing the design, making the bill of materials, making the CAD drawings, and costing out everything, and deciding what the component level is going to be, and you know what the powertrain is, and the battery, and at least figuring out what the options are. The pre-production's kind of coming to a close now. We're building number six and seven. We figured 10 samples would be enough, and you know, we've got orders to get to that 10. So all the first production and the pre-production sold to schools that are doing electric vehicle training. So it's way easier to start on a vehicle like this, and the students learn a lot more than they would like trying to work on a Leaf or a Tesla. You know, there's not much they could do, but this one they could actually make modifications and
totally hack.
Yeah, it's really a hackable thing, yeah. My example was electric bikes. Nobody thought, oh, who would ever put an electric motor on a bike? You're ruining the bike. You know, you're not going to get any exercise, right?
And small motor on it, maybe get more exercise.
Exactly, yeah. They should be small. They should be small, and they should have pedals. But I guess in Holland, it makes up a third of the sales are electric bikes. And even in the U.S., they're catching on. This guy, you know, Ross sells a lot of them, and you go to the bike shows now, it went from no bikes, no electric bikes. I think I brought to the Inner Bike Show, it's the International Bicycle Show, I think it was in Los Angeles then. I think I first went in 91, and there wasn't any other electric bike there till maybe like 96 or something like that. Yeah, so we're the only ones, and it took a lot of explaining. They weren't getting it, you know, but it's really regulatory. That's why in China, 120 million minimum running around China now. 120 million electric bikes.
Are they all the same design, basically?
No. There was between 1,000 and 5,000 manufacturers. Some look like scooters. They look like Vespas with pedals way out here. You don't use them. They have big motors. And some of them look like bikes, and some are like mountain bikes now. And some are kids are riding really fast ones, you know?
See, that is happening pollution-wise with little two-cycle motors.
Couldn't breathe. Now, I just, even in Beijing now, I think it was the numbers like 130 is completely polluted, stay indoors, awful. It hit 730. It's killing huge numbers of people every day, the pollution in China. And that's, you know, that's a capital city. So it's...
it's horrible.
Yeah, so it's regulatory.
It's an open project,
yeah, yeah. Source is a software term, you know, like for source code. Yeah. And there are issues around manufactured goods, like who's responsible for it, you know, so the manufacturer's responsible for it. So, but as far as the design being open, it's very open. You can make your own that way. A lot of it's 1960s VW parts. These parts are made in Mexico, Brazil, Indonesia, South Africa, US, and Germany. So type 1 VW, 22 million of these were made. So the parts and the understanding of how to keep them running is pretty well known. The brakes are aftermarket VW, the master cylinders, the wheels, the back hub is now a VW hub from the 60s, and the parts in there. They're not old parts, they're brand new parts that are still made, and they're still made in lots of countries too. So we built it with the idea of distributed manufacturing. Like, if we're gonna make a climate change, meaning if we're making a significant impact on the climate, these have to be made in the millions. It seems kind of crazy now, we only have three, but you know, I think by the time I went to China, we'd only made maybe 3,000 or 4,000 bicycles, you know, where they make that before lunch, you know. So these parts are available and reliable and well known. And there's some, this is a motorcycle shock because we're in a very lightweight category. Well, besides being a motorcycle, but it's a 1,200 pound vehicle. Where cars now are all 3,000 pounds. Even a Prius is around 3,000 pounds. So it's very light. The motors and batteries and electronics and chargers are all electric vehicle parts that are widely available. Like this in particular, like a forklift motor, it's been really unchanged for 100 years. That's a series wound DC motor. It's not any big technology. Even the AC motor that we're running, that's Tesla. That was invented in the late, you know, like 1890s or something like that. So power electronics have gone a long way, and batteries have changed a lot too. Or you know, particularly now, they're starting to. The range is, of course, dependent on a lot of circumstances, the battery in particular, and then driving, you know, speeds and all. This one, it'll go 50 miles, and that's kind of taking it easy on it. As far as the switch goes, it's the driving experience. It's really fun. It's kind of like a motorcycle that's safe. You know, you feel protected in a steel cage, and it's very lively. Because it's so light and it's got three wheels, it turns really, really well. It's fun. And I personally like the open experience too. You can smell things, hear things, watch the wheels. You can see the front wheels, the tires. You can see the tire where it hits the ground. I'm interested in countries that don't have auto manufacturing, if they could start with this. So if they don't have oil and they don't have an auto industry, they might want to start with this, you know, and they could configure it however they want. You know, this is sitting with one seat in it. It's made for at least up to four seats. And
what happens if it rains?
If it rains? I drove it during a winter, and I wore my motorcycle clothes, and I park it outside. I had to knock the water out of the seat before I sat in it. It was a tremendous pleasure to drive it in the rain. It's so much fun.
Somebody asked how long does it take to charge it up and how to increase the range.
With this charger, it's around 6 hours or so. And it's 110 volt. It's just, you plug it in the wall like you would a cell phone or something. Very fast. It's not a very big battery. It's 10 kilowatt hour. It's about one third the size of a Leaf, the battery. But the weight of the vehicle is about one third of a Leaf.
So you can increase the range.
Yeah, you could double up this pack. The pack's only 250 pounds. You can probably hold three of them if we wanted to go really far. When we're finished with this pre-production process, we'll have a product and we'll put a price on it. It looks like it's going to be still a kit initially, and there's some builders that are interested in it and electric vehicle movement, and there's people that want to experiment with motors and batteries, and that'll get us to the next step. We're hoping to interest other builders that want to make assembly plants, you know, in their communities, in their countries, I think particularly their countries, and see where it goes from there. See what the interest is in this type of vehicle, because it's really identifying a new type. Now, this type doesn't really exist yet.
That was James McGreen, the principal inventor of Switch Vehicle, an electric three-wheel motorcycle, an open crash cage design with up to four seats. It is highway legal and easily reaches 55 miles per hour. The smallest available battery pack gives it a range of about 50 miles. The open design feature of the Switch makes it possible to add another battery pack or other features. McGreen was demonstrating prototype number 5, and he and his partner, Peter Oliver, will build a total of 10 before unveiling the Switch to the public. For photos of the Switch and links to McGreen's website, come to TUC Radio at tucradio.org. The Switch website has a few design options and prices for battery packs for those who want to get involved in the build-to-order and prototype phase. This is part of TUC Radio's Going Home series, or maybe rather Driving Home in this case. It's available as part of the collection on a one-hour CD. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. You can get information on how to order a one-hour CD at cost on tucradio.org or by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. TUC Radio's mailing address is Post Office Box 44, Calpella, California, 95418. That's Calpella, California, 95418. For more information, call 707-463-2654 or go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org, for the address and donate buttons. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.